I think so many people today are exhausted mentally, emotionally, and spiritually, and just honestly trying to push through everything on their own. And maybe that's you. Maybe you're feeling anxious all the time, overwhelmed in your relationships, burnt out, or just carrying things that feel really heavy right now. And that's why I'm so grateful to share about Catholic Counselors. They offer pastoral counseling that's rooted in both psychological wisdom and the truth of the Catholic faith, which is something that's honestly so rare to find today. Their whole approach is really centered on helping you heal and flourish mentally, emotionally, relationally, and spiritually. Everything is done through telecounseling, so you can connect with someone from wherever you are. And they also have incredible resources on marriage, parenting, anxiety, relationships, and emotional healing. If this is something that you've been needing support in, I really encourage you to check them out at CatholicCounselors.com. I'll have everything linked in the show notes.
Hey, I'm your host, Mari Wagner, and you're listening to the Ever Be Podcast, where faith meets lifestyle. I'm so excited you're here. Whether you're a new listener or a longtime follower, I know there's something here for you. Pull up a chair and listen in for insightful, real-life conversations and actionable steps on how to claim the full life God created you for. If you're a woman desiring to live a Christ-centered life in today's modern world, then this is for you. Welcome to Ever Be.
Welcome back to Ever Be, everybody. Today I have a special guest on, Mallory Smythe. She's a dear friend, a national speaker, author, and the host of the Gospel and Everything Else podcast. Welcome, Mallory, to Ever Be. We're so excited to have you.
Mari, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
We connected a couple months ago after Seek and just had such a great coffee date talking about living the gospel in our lives and writing and speaking and mission and ministry and like how do we really serve the world today and all the needs that our generations have. So I'm excited to just bring you on and kind of go deeper in that conversation and share it with all of our listeners. But before we do, can you just maybe share a little bit more detail about what you're doing, what kind of work you do, all that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, my thing is that the gospel is real and God is real and he exists whether or not we believe in him. And so that's a big part of my story that I will not go heavily into. But the short of it is that I had a massive conversion at the end of college, and it started because I realized I was miserable. I was doing everything the culture told me to do. I was chasing happiness. And I wasn't happy at all. And so I started to really search. And I wasn't even searching for God necessarily. I was just searching for honesty and truth. And I was going to align myself with that truth. That started with looking into atheism. And I did that with an open heart and decided it wasn't true. And that's whenever I just said, God, I'm jumping on your team and you better prove yourself to me. And over the next few years, that's exactly what he did. He proved himself to me in a way that made me be able to say, I know you're real. And if you're real, then I should be able to see your reality and how you order the world unfolding in the world around me. And so I fell in love with Jesus. I fell in love with the scriptures in particular. And I slowly but surely started to give my life to Christ. And that ended in me leaving my accounting job. It was my first career and just jumping into ministry. So I've been doing full-time ministry for the past 15 years. And my goal with that is just to reintroduce Jesus to anyone who wants to know him, anyone who thinks they know him and they've been inoculated to him and they've walked away, or anybody who's just curious and doesn't know where to start. And so that has ended up with me being a focus missionary for, I believe I was a focus missionary for 5 years. My husband was a focus missionary for 14 years. And then I went into women's ministry with Endow and then with Walking with Purpose. And during that time, I wrote my own story about coming back to the Catholic Church called Rekindled as a way just to level with my friends. Because what I had seen, and Mari, I'm curious if you've seen some of the same things. And I do think the environment has changed quite a bit. But when I fell in love with the Lord, my friends not only didn't get it, but they were not willing to ask me about it. And we had all gone to Catholic school our whole lives because we're all from South Louisiana. And so my book was my response to say, if they were ever to say, why did you go crazy? Like, why did you walk away from your career? Why can't you stop talking about Jesus? Like, the church doesn't seem to be all that great. This would be my honest, raw answer to you. And then from there, during my time in Walking with Purpose, God opened the doors for me to be able to write 3 Bible studies, which was a dream of mine and still is. And just to be able to help women in particular dive into the scriptures in a way that reveals the magic that they are transformative, that they will bring you closer to Jesus. And then since then, I've been raising 5 kids and recording a podcast about once a month and doing some writing for Focus on the side.
That is awesome. You are doing it all. I love it.
If you saw my house, you would say, like, she's doing it. Barely.
No, I totally feel that. I wear a lot of hats too. And sometimes something's got to go. But all the work that you're doing is so amazing. And before we jump into the conversation, I forgot to tell you this before we pressed play. So you're going to be on the spot a little bit. But at the very beginning of our episodes, we do something called an Ever Be moment.
Okay.
And that's basically just sharing like a God moment, a way that God worked in your life. Because the whole premise of the podcast is for God's praise ever to ever be on our lips. Mm-hmm. So I'll give you a second to think about it because I am curious to know what is your Ever Be moment lately?
Lately. Okay, I have it.
Perfect.
I'm like, that could be the rest of the podcast. I could just go through all the Ever Be moments.
I know, right?
In my life.
Yeah. It could be a whole podcast.
So, and hopefully for your listeners, maybe this will provide some encouragement for them. On Mother's Day, I woke up early. And I was like, I am praying a holy hour. Like, I pray every day, but it gets a little difficult for me to get to the Adoration Chapel, yeah. which is 4 minutes away. It's really close, but it gets difficult to get there. And so I woke up. I said, Jared, I'll see you at church.
I'm going.
I'm going to Adoration before we go to Mass. And I only got about half an hour, but that was on me. So anyway, I'm sitting there and I'm just praying. And sorry, I'm emotional this week. Who knows why? It's probably hormones. So if I cry, sorry. But
bring it on.
I am sitting with Jesus in the Adoration Chapel and I'm just listening. I'm just open to him, happy to be with him. And as what I like to do in the Adoration Chapel is go through my memories with him, because if we are willing to recall what the Lord has done for us, it's a lot easier for us to have faith whenever we're going through hard times. And it's also a lot easier for us to just remember that he has our good whenever we think he's not giving us the thing we want. And so that's kind of what I was doing. Like, you were here in my life then, you were here in my life then, you were here in my life. And I was thinking about my children, because for the past 10 years, almost, I've just been giving birth. and that can feel chaotic and overwhelming and difficult and beautiful at the same time, but you have all of these emotions and you're just trying to survive. And so I was praying, and what I kept getting from the Lord was, behold, I make all things new from the book of Revelation. And so I was talking like just with him on that, like, I make all things new. And what he was giving to me was like, I'm going to make your memories new. I'm going to renew your mind. I can renew your body. I can renew your marriage. I can renew all these times in your life where you were confused or you were hurt or you were wounded. And it wasn't just like, I'm going to make your future new. And what I realized was, when I think of my children and I think about all these past 10 years, for the most part, all I see is sweetness. Like, you just think of the times when they were really cute, or, you know, you saw God in them, or you saw them accomplish something new. And it's almost like all that pain and the frustration and the sleeplessness and just these things. And like, for me, just being like, why am I having another baby? Like, all of it melts away. And he enters and he's like, see, this is where I was. I'm making all things new. And I've been praying about that a lot, because that's my personal journey. That's not everybody's journey. Everybody has different, you know, you're going through a beautiful journey right now. But as we are sitting down and we're like, you didn't, like, why are you withholding this from me? Why are you forcing me to go through this difficult season? Why is this relationship breaking down? I think the Lord stands over us and he says, behold, I am making all things new. Like, if you will let me, I will go in. And you might not see it today, but if you will hold on, you will see it. And you will see how I made it new and where I was. And so it's just been kind of motivating me lately.
That is a beautiful perspective. I'm definitely going to take that with me the rest of the week. I love that. Thank you for sharing that. That was super encouraging. My Ever Be moment is, so I lead a Bible study every week, and we do it throughout the year, and then we pause for the summer. So we're nearing up on the end here. We just finished a whole series that we did on personal prayer and to apply everything we learned from this series. It was taught by Father Boniface. It was amazing. We went to do a holy hour as a Bible study yesterday in adoration. And that was just such a beautiful moment to see just the women that I've walked with who yearn to love the Lord, yearn to follow Him, and just emulate Him in their vocations and everything just before the Lord. Like, I sat in the back and just like watched everybody finish up their holy hour, and some of them brought their babies, and some of them don't have kids, and some of them, you know, they had their journals. They were all doing all different things just like in front of the Lord. And for me, that was just such a reminder of the importance of just like showing up in front of Jesus and letting Him do the work, especially as a Bible study leader. We can do only so much to share our stories and our testimonies and encourage and, you know, give tips on like how to live out your faith and everything. But really in the end, I was there and I just felt the Lord say like, thank you for bringing them to me. That's all you have to do. Like, all you have to do is bring them to me. So I hope that's an encouragement for others as well. Like, if you're leading a Bible study or walking with women, sometimes we don't need to try very hard. We just need to bring them to Jesus. And that's also great advice for ourselves. Sometimes we don't have to strive super hard in our life. We just need to put ourselves in front of Jesus's presence and let Him do the work. So that's my moment.
I love it. It's so simple. I tend to complicate it. I won't project.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's absolutely. It's so simple.
Yeah. Well, let's dive in. So first thing I want to ask, I know you love Romans 12 and the whole idea of being transformed by the renewal of your mind. And I also love that verse. So I want to hear more about it. What does that actually look like in our everyday life as a modern woman?
It's a great question. And it is such a beautiful verse. What is it? I know you just paraphrased it. I'm trying to see if I can pull it for real. Do not be conformed to this age, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind. So that do not be conformed to this age.
Yes.
So this is just such a big part of my own story. And part of it was whenever I came back to the faith, I came back through the Protestant church. And as many people do, I got very angry with the Catholic church. Like, where was this? Where were the cute boys with their Bibles open at the coffee shop and talking about reaching the nations? And we talk about Jesus a lot. And so I had just a lot. First of all, I had a lot of preconceived notions from the culture because I had been living for the culture. Like, that's where I wanted to find happiness. And then I had that conversion in the Protestant church. So I got really angry to the Catholic church. And so what ended up happening probably over a span of 5 years was I just decided to allow myself to be wrong. And I started asking questions. And so with the Catholic church in particular, it's like, oh, the church is bigoted. The church hates gay people. The church is hates women, like, or whatever it is. And so I just was saying, okay, is that true? And if it's not, then why does the church hold this, what it holds? And as I started to research, I realized that it was my mind that was wrong. Romans chapter 1 tells us that in our rebellion against God, our minds were darkened. So we don't actually see reality the way it exists. And there's a book that I love by Frank Sheed. He was a street corner preacher in England. I love the first chapter because that's all I've read. Like 15 times. But he talks about this idea that as Catholics, a lot of times we walk around with Catholic patches. We have a Catholic will, so we want to love God, but we don't have a Catholic intellect. We are still formed by the same, magazines, podcasts, social media, news platforms, whatever it is that everyone else is formed by. Therefore, we don't see reality the way the church sees it. And so what he talks about is that we are called to basically go sane, that the closer we are to seeing reality, the more that we become sane because our what we see matches what the church sees. And so for us today, well, what does that look like? It looks like pursuing truth and being willing to be wrong in our preconceived notions, because what we are living in right now is a culture that has been fashioned in its ideas within the past 100 years, maybe 70, maybe 20. So some of the ideas that we have, they're very new ideas. And so if we're really holding on to them, we can say, okay, this idea is 70 years old. The church is 2,000 years old. And if we go all the way back to Genesis, right, it's a lot older than that. And there's wisdom there.
Yeah.
And so am I willing to read the scriptures? Am I willing to seek out counsel? Am I willing to up-level what I'm consuming and maybe consume some things that are going to teach me more than just the popular novel that's on the shelf at Target, so that I can actually start to think and see the world differently and have it be closer to what the church sees, because the church sees what is there.
Yeah, I love that. That is so helpful. Such a helpful way to put it. Like, and we're going to get into it later too, but like what we're consuming is forming our worldview and our opinions and our mind. And so if we're not consuming the resources the church has given us, well, yeah, it makes sense. Like, we're not going to form our mind in that same worldview and mindset that the world is, or that the church is coming from. So that's super helpful. And let's just get into that conversation a little bit more. I mean, you're saying like the culture is constantly forming us. So what are some of the biggest ways that you see right now that women today are being shaped by the culture instead of by the gospel?
I see it two ways. I guess I see, and a lot of it comes from social media. But I think the first way, the culture for my lifetime has, you know, it's been very focused on feminism and girl power and girl boss and in a certain sense, a very self-centered life. When I grew up, it was, you can do anything. You can be anything. You can do anything. Reach for your dreams. And then, you know, after you get your career, after you make a bunch of money or whatever it is, then settle down and have a family. And so when you're told that, your whole life, or you're also told because you're a woman that the cult, like men don't like you, the culture doesn't like you, you're a second class citizen. How are you going to start to see the world? Right? Well, in two ways. One, you're going to be entitled because you were just told your whole life that you're supposed to be happy. And listen, you are. I'm not anti-happiness.
Totally.
But you can do anything. You can be anything, right? If you just try your best. I mean, that was the message I got. And then on the other hand, but you're not going to make as much money because you're a woman. You're going to be discriminated against because you're a woman. And so you need to rise up and overcome the patriarchy so that you can become your full self. I mean, I think that's something that on one hand, what I've seen is like we just love to tell women what to do in one way or the other. And I know for me, I know I really struggled becoming a mother, and I never had anything against being a mom. I wasn't somebody who was wanting that like deeply. I was like, oh, I just can't wait to be a wife and a mother. I just assumed I would get married and have children. And as I kind of dug into like, why am I grating against this so hard? It's because the culture told me my whole life I was the center of the universe and I didn't need to sacrifice. And I was watching this documentary on Screens and Teenagers. It's called Screenagers. And at the beginning, they were going through the generations. And so they were talking about their childhoods and the generations. And as it got to the grandmother who was in her late 80s, she was like, I've been carrying water on the farm since I was two. And I was like, and you know what? I bet she had an easier time in adulthood. Because if you want good things, if you want to live a life of love, whether it's in motherhood or not, like no matter what it is, if you want to live the love God is calling you to live and be genuinely fulfilled, that means you're going to have to one day lay down some of your happiness for someone else.
Yep.
And you're going to get something back. But I think as women who are my age and your age, we have been told the opposite for so long, it's hard for us to even come out of that paradigm. And then in the church, I feel like we've almost swung the pendulum the other way. You know, it's like your entire identity is locked up in who you are as a wife and a mother. And God forbid, if you have a dream, you know, if you have a reason to, you know, delay children for an indefinite amount of time, like, well, we have some judgment for you. And I think that can be overstating it a little bit. But for women in particular, I think just the idea of like, I am called, like I was made by God. I'm loved by Him. I am fallen, which means there are things in me that I have to work on, not just my sin, but also like we talked about the way I see the world. And then I have to discern with God his plan for my life and be obedient to that and be confident in that. And that's going to require me to look different from the culture. And it might actually require me to look different from some of the other circles that I'm in.
Totally. And both may be good, you know? And, yes. I love that you've brought up kind of that juxtaposition that I think so many women are feeling today with both voices of just like, you know, quote unquote, don't throw your life away and be a wife and mom, like go after your career and do big things and be successful and be the boss babe and like own your own business and do everything. And then you've got like kind of the more traditional side that like some of our culture is leaning as well of just like, there's nothing absolutely more important than you staying home. And like, if you ever would consider not being 100% a stay-at-home mom, then you're not prioritizing your family, which is just kind of the two extremes. And I think a lot of women like need to hear the wisdom of like, there may be a middle ground. there might be a middle ground to do both. But so how do we discern the difference between kind of these things that we're consuming that are harmless versus something that's actually forming our worldview in an unhealthy way? And I think that this is something that even I've struggled with a lot in the past too, where I think like, oh, I have great formation. So like me watching The Bachelor and Love is Blind all the time, like isn't actually doing anything because like I know exactly what my values are. You know what I mean? Or like scrolling a ton on social media and following different accounts or whatever. You know, I think sometimes we think like, it's just harmless. It's just social media. Like it's just a 10-second video. Mm-hmm. Like what is it really doing to me? So I'm really curious to kind of hear your thoughts on that. Like what's actually forming us versus what's something that's kind of more harmless.
I think that's a great question. What I have experienced in my own life is self-knowledge is the first thing. I need to know myself to know what I can handle. So for me, for example, I can't listen to true crime. Like if I want to have nightmares, I should just put on a good, it's not good for my spirit. It's dark in what it is. And I'd probably go as far as I think most people probably aren't made for it. We weren't meant to live mentally in those places. However, you have to know yourself. My husband can watch horror films and ingest them in a very different way than me. Right. Mm-hmm. And so for him, it's going to be, okay, he actually can do it. It's not, I don't know if I would say he's like totally fine, but he can probably learn something from it. And I'm sitting here and I'm just like, my spirit's way too sensitive. Another thing, speaking of having a sensitive spirit, right now, Catholics are so good at social media. We're very good at evangelizing, especially in podcast land. And so a lot of times there will be so-and-so interviews a person who was formerly in the Church of Satan or formerly a Satanist. I cannot tell you how many times I've started those podcasts and had to turn them off. Man. And it's not that there's anything wrong necessarily with the content because they are trying to evangelize people. It's coming from a good place. Man. But my spirit is too sensitive. And I feel it. And it gets to the point where I want to listen because it's sensational. I want to know, but I almost feel the Holy Spirit saying, like, are you going to obey me or not? And there's been a time or two where I haven't obeyed and then it's stuck in my head. Now, as far as some of the shows that are on Netflix that are just a little lighter and also kind of dumb or just social media in general.
Yeah.
Do you get on and compare yourself to other people? Right. Is that your go-to or are you confident in who you are? Like there are certain accounts where I never compare myself to them and it's kind of fun to watch them. But if I find myself wishing I had their life, thinking my life isn't good because theirs is, thinking I'm a failure because they're accomplishing something in their career that I'm not, right? That is actually pulling me away from what I know God is calling me to. And we need to be paying attention to those things. And then the other thing is, what sins do you struggle with? Because, and I have not had a huge story around chastity. I mean, I've had some struggles with it, but not, I'm not a chastity speaker. But when I was a missionary, I started watching Game of Thrones because it was very popular and I like fantasy stuff. And I knew I shouldn't be watching it. I 100% knew I shouldn't be watching it. And so what I would do is every day I'd like go to bed, I'd watch a couple episodes. I'd wake up the next day and I'd tell my missionary, like my team director, hey, just so you know, I watched this. And I was totally going to confession. After the second season, what I was thinking about was very different than what I had been thinking about 2 weeks ago. And I noticed it. Mm. And then I was like, this is not good for me. This is not good for me mentally. It's not bringing me to a good mental place. And so for us to discern, there are some things that are objectively wrong and they're promoting things that are wrong. And we should stay away from those things. There are some things that might feel like a mindless escape. And I don't think there's anything necessarily wrong with that in moderation. But are we forming a life where we are actually pursuing what's true, good, and beautiful? And then maybe every now and then, like Jared and I will scroll on his Instagram account some nights. It's almost like a date because his Instagram algorithm is hilarious.
You know, that is literally... Uh-huh. That's literally Trey and I. Like, his feed is so funny and mine is all like helpful tools on how to up level your life or whatever. And he's always like, why do you always send me the boring reels? Like, where are the funny ones? And I'm like, I don't know. I want funny content.
That's the same. And so anytime there is a serious reel on his, I'm like, I've seen that one already. Let's move.
They
are just silly. There's nothing moral. There's no moral statement necessarily.
Yep.
And for him and I, we will both end up doubled over cracking up. That's good for our marriage. You know,
totally.
Should we limit the time that we're on there scrolling? Of course. But I just, where is this leading my mind? Do I know myself well enough to know what I can handle personally? What sins do I struggle with that this might be a trigger point for me? And then am I confident in who I am, like who God made me to be able to handle what's coming my way? Something that I like to do a lot is I try to test what I'm consuming against the gospel message. This is my podcast.
Oh.
So what I mean by that is, and I'll just use my favorite example, although that podcast episode was like number three, Meghan Markle. All right. Everybody loves to hate Meghan Markle. I love following the royals. I love following Meghan and Harry. Like, I am not over here pontificating. I love that stuff.
Yep.
And I'm watching as their life unfolds according to the media. And I'm going, okay, why can't she win? I don't like her. Many people don't like her. Why can't she win? And it's because the gospel is real. It's because she was given a gift of being brought into the royal family. That has responsibilities in it, that has things that are not good. Obviously, there's disorder there, but it's also quite a privilege. And then she single-handedly messed the whole thing up. She's never acknowledged it. She's never been humble about it whatsoever. And she just wants to move on and become a celebrity. Well, what I think of with that is whenever Jesus says, when you go and take your gift to the altar and you remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift at the altar and go make amends with your brother and then come back and make your gift. And what we're watching her is she's trying to make a gift at the altar, but she won't even go make amends and nobody's buying it. And so I think if we know the gospel well enough, if we know Jesus well enough, we can actually engage in culture, pop culture, and we can test it against what we know to be true in the gospel. And then it will strengthen what we know because we see it unfolding in real time.
We've tried a lot of coffee over the years, and 7 Weeks Coffee is the one that my husband and I have landed on recently that we are loving. It is one of our favorite coffees that we keep in the house. And it's not just great coffee, but it's a brand built around values that we take so seriously. 7 Weeks Coffee is America's pro-life coffee company on a mission to fund the pro-life movement one cup of coffee at a time. This means so much to me because of just my personal story. My mom was pregnant with me when she was 19, and against all the advice she was getting from everybody around her to terminate the pregnancy because she was quote unquote going to wreck her life, she decided to proceed courageously with parenting me and having me, and I am so grateful for that. So we want to support companies that are pro-life and are supporting moms who are choosing life. So why are they called 7 Weeks Coffee? Because at 7 weeks, a baby is the size of a coffee bean, and it's the same time a heartbeat is clearly detected on an ultrasound. They've built their business around saving lives by donating 10% of every sale, which is 50% of profits, to pregnancy centers and pro-life organizations nationwide. They've now raised over $1.8 million and literally saved 17,000 lives. Now, let's talk about the coffee because I do care what I'm fueling my body with. It's mold-free, pesticide-free, shade-grown, and low acid, and it's organically farmed. So it truly checks all of my boxes. So go to 7weekscoffee.com and save 15%
10% forever when you subscribe, plus get a free gift with your order. And exclusively for my listeners, use code MARI for an extra 10% off your first order. That's 25% total savings on your first order, plus a free gift when you use the code MARI, M-A-R-I, at checkout.
Wow, yeah, that's such a unique perspective and way to look at it. And I think sometimes, like, we can genuinely love Jesus and still kind of let these secular ways of thinking embed themselves in our mind unknowingly. Mm-hmm. How can we fight against that? Like, how can we do that? You know, how can we know the gospel more so that our mind is formed in that way, so that we can look at things that are happening in our culture and stack it up against that and not just fall into the secular way of thinking, because those ways are loud and they're easier to pick up and easier to ingrain in our mind. So what would be your advice there?
I think that's a great point. I think part of it is because we live in a soundbite culture and half truths sound really good in about four words. Like, oh, love, yeah, is love. Love is love. Okay. That, who's going to argue with that? You know, I could think of a few more, but we have these little quippy sayings, and then they mean a bunch of different things, but it's a short saying, and we are only made for short content. Mm-hmm. And the truth is a little more complicated. The truth is a little more nuanced. It requires us to have a little longer of an attention span. And so, it's true. So the first thing do we know the truth? And then that's the first question. Do you have a prayer life? Are you reading the scriptures? Are you listening to voices who are seeking truth? I think that's the first thing, is if you're going to be able to test the gospel or your own worldview, whether it be secular or not, against something else, you have to know what that something else is. So what did Jesus say? What does the church teach? And when it comes to some of these larger issues, you know, because there's just so much in the culture right now about, you know, transgender, homosexuality, politics, and the left versus the right. We already talked about feminism. I mean, there's just so many big conversations happening. And all of us, mm-hmm, are learning something about them. All of us are talking about them in our side conversations.
Yes.
And so, and what we want is to be nice people. That's what I want. I'm not a fighter. I want to be a good person. I want to be moral. I want to be kind. And so then the question is, if I am learning the truth and I bump up against something I don't like, whatever it might be, why don't I like it? And then could they have a point? And what I mean by this is, if you take, okay, I have this particular stance, it's a secular stance, whatever it is, play that out till the end. Well, okay, if I live this way, then I'll make this decision. I'll do this thing. Okay, am I happy at the end of my life? Mm-hmm. Like, have I actually made a good life living like this, believing this thing? Okay. Mm-hmm. What the church says, maybe it seems harder. Maybe it seems meaner. Okay, let's say I follow that. I follow sacrificial love. All right. For me, sometimes that's, I'm a bit of a career woman at heart. If you came to my house, you would not see a career woman. Like, you would see a girl who is running from preschool performance to jump on a podcast for an hour and then go clean the upstairs. And sometimes that can grate on me, right? Because I have been taught my whole life I can do whatever I want and accomplish whatever I want. And yet I have six people who are forcing me not to.
Yeah.
But if I were to leave them behind and go after my quote unquote Christian career, now I'm a fraud.
Right. Right. Like,
immediately out of the gate, I'm faking it. Okay. And if I make a lot of money and I get deals I want, or blah, 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 do I end up happy at the end when my kids are going, like, but my mom wasn't around? Mm-hmm. Or do I follow the way of love? Do I follow what the church is calling me to, what Jesus is calling me to, and say, I'm going to sacrifice for my family? It's not always going to be great. It's not always going to be easy. How am I going to feel when I'm 65? God willing, I will have a good relationship with my kids, have a good relationship with my husband. God willing, they'll be practicing the faith, verdicts out, mm-hmm, right? But I'll be able to actually enjoy the fruits of my sacrifice. Mm-hmm. And you can actually do that with anything. So if the culture is teaching you to live a certain way, you can play that out till the end. Will it lead me to happiness? If the church is telling you to live a certain way, you can play that out till the end. Will that lead me to happiness? And I think that can actually kind of help us to figure out, okay, what's real? If that's my goal, to become a good person who's happy, if that's my hope for other people, then how do I do that? And then I have one more thing to add. I know I'm such a long rambler.
Oh, no. There, keep it coming. It's so
there's a difference between, right, we talk about, and we've talked about it in focus before, but there's a difference between the truth and how I treat individuals. And I think it's so important. So I can hold dearly everything the Catholic Church teaches about how to live, about how to give my money, about how to set up a family, about how to follow the Lord, about sexuality, all of it. I can hold it dearly as true. And then I can meet somebody who was very much not living according to that and treat them very kind. And I'm not like hurting the truth over here. I am being Jesus to the individual. And that doesn't mean you let go of the truth, but I think sometimes we have a heart. It's like, well, if I believe all this, if I take it, then I have to be mean to everybody. Well, no, you don't. You just treat them with respect because they're human. And so I think that sometimes I think people get caught up in that.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, those are the opportunities Jesus gives us to evangelize, right? Like to evangelize, like with our life. And I mean, we don't need to get into all the tactics of evangelization. That would be a whole nother podcast in itself. But value exactly what you're saying, like valuing that relationship over you just proving a point. And I think especially when it comes to trying to do that with other Christians, because like we said, like there are a lot of Christians that like love Jesus very much and yet are kind of living in secular ways. And I think like as Christians striving to live a Christ-centered life, it can be easy to kind of look at them and be like, what are you doing? You know, and kind of come at it from an abrasive standpoint. But even there, like valuing the relationship, building that relationship, and slowly sharing the truth that you hold so dearly with your life. And so that there's openness to kind of receive where you're coming from and the testimony that you have. And one thing that I just appreciate about your approach is that you don't just criticize the culture, but you really try to understand kind of that deeper longing people are searching for underneath it. And this whole idea of like, play it out to the end. And like, are you happy in the end? I think that exercise reveals to ourselves, what are those deeper things that we're longing for? What do we actually long for? Because if we get to the end and we realize we're not happy, then it's like, oh, maybe I didn't actually long for all that success and being promoted and money. Like, so then what is it that I actually long for? So can you talk a little bit more about that?
I think it's a good point that you bring up about it revealing what you long for. And with women in particular, and again, and I'm glad you said I'm not criticizing the culture, because I am, I talk about the culture because in a certain sense, it's not like I am the culture, but I love the culture.
Yeah.
I like following a lot of trends. I don't take part in most of them because I don't know. Yeah. I just don't. But I like following them. I like seeing what's happening. I was watching everybody's outfit at the Met Gala and judging accordingly. Yeah. Like these are things I do enjoy them. For women in particular, I mean, we long to be loved, and I think we really long to be seen as beautiful. I think those are two things for women that we a lot of ways don't believe that we're lovable. And I do believe most women, even if you're the most physically beautiful specimen, most women do not look in the mirror and see their own beauty well. And I actually, I wrote a talk years ago and where I talked about this. Basically, what I said was that God made each one of us to bring people to him through our beauty. And I'm not talking about physical beauty necessarily. I'm talking about the beauty that's part of who we are in our nature. But because of the fall, what we as women do, we can't see our own beauty and we use it in distorted ways. So we use it to own people. We use it to manipulate people, things like that, instead of using it to be a self-gift and to bring people to know Jesus. And what ends up happening is that we look in the mirror and we hate what we see and we wish it was different. But then we walk out the door and we see other women and we see their beauty. We have no problem. Yeah. Right? There's women who can walk in my door and maybe they're not physically a supermodel, but because of who they are, because of how they serve, because of their humor, just because of their personality, I find them so beautiful. Right. And all of us, it's easy for us to do this. And so because of that, I think that's what we chase. I think we chase wanting to be loved. I think we chase wanting to feel beautiful, which is why so many of the trends and the secular ways of thinking enter in and take over, right? And so, right, some of the beauty trends, some of the messages that we receive, some of the messages even about sex, like we haven't even talked about that, about the worldview on female-male relationships right now that are sexual and how they're so disordered.
Mm-hmm.
It's because in our heart of hearts, we long to be loved, but we're chasing after it in distorted ways and we're using it to manipulate people in our lives. And we long to be seen as beautiful and see ourselves as beautiful. The thing about Eve in the garden is that what the devil offered her, God had already offered to her. He had already given her everything she wanted. He had already made her like him, right? That was the lie. The enemy was saying, oh, if you eat this apple, you will be like God. You will know good from evil. And God is saying, I already did that.
I made you in my likeness from the beginning.
I made you in my image and likeness. But for you to experience the goodness and the fruit of that, you have to do it my way. And the enemy said, you can have what God wants to give you, but you can do it your way.
Mm.
And so what'd you say?
It puts you at the center.
It puts you at the center. And so for us, the love, the feeling beautiful, feeling powerful, accomplished, seen in the eyes of the world, God has already given it all to us. It's at our disposal right now. All we have to do is know him and allow him to just mirror it back to us and believe the things he says to us, right? Mm-hmm. Even if someone's listening and they're like, Mallory, you don't know the mistakes I made. Well, you know what? You don't know the mistakes I've made. Okay. Even if you're in a place where you feel broken and you feel unworthy and you feel like you can't be lovable or you really are not beautiful, those are lies. God has given you everything you need from him today. And so anything that the culture is selling us, a lot of times they're selling us the way the enemy sold to Eve. You can have everything the Lord's already given it to you, but you can have it on your own terms. And I think for us, we really need to be careful about that.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful. So one of my questions I was going to ask, so we'll just jump to that now, was what are some of the cultural messages that women are hearing constantly today that sound really good on the surface, but are actually leading us away from freedom and flourishing? And I think it's important to really name those and say those out loud, because sometimes we don't realize like what it's actually saying to us. And one of those, I forgot how you worded what you just said at the end. Do you remember how you worded that?
You can have what God wants to give you, but you on your own terms.
Oh, yeah, exactly. That is for sure one of them. Are there other messages like that, that you're like, yes, like women need to know, like these are lies. These are not actually leading them to freedom and flourishing.
So that is one of them. You are the center of your universe. You are the center of your own world. Reality is what you make it to be. So you can actually think reality into being. And this is a big thing with manifesting and with a lot of the New Age movement things. If I think it, if I place myself in it, I can have it. Right? Which again, puts me at the center and makes it about me and serving my selfish desires. Now, this is a tangent, but the issue with manifesting is it's really close to prayer. And it really, like, if you have a positive worldview, you will have a happier life. If you pray for things, the Lord will give you good things. The difference is you're putting yourself at the center. You're taking what the Lord wants to give you on your own terms and not willing to follow maybe a road of sacrifice to get there. So what did I just say? I said, the world is about you and you're at the center of it. Reality is what you make it. I think your present decisions don't matter for the future. You can make decisions, you can have certain behaviors, and you can actually do those things in a vacuum, and they're not going to affect the rest of your life. They're not going to affect the way you feel. They're not going to affect whether you're happy or depressed. They're not going to affect your bank account. They're not going to affect your future. When in reality, the decisions you make today actually do matter for tomorrow, and so we should try to make them with a discerning spirit and a heart of virtue. Sex is disposable. Right. And I know from what I've heard, Gen Z, like younger Gen Z, is actually not very sexually active, but it seems like it comes from a disordered understanding of what the beauty of sex, but it's just become something either way. Either I'm going to do a lot of it because it doesn't matter and I'm going to throw it away, or I don't care about it at all. So it doesn't matter. I'm not going to participate. Yeah. And it actually doesn't bring you into any sort of true relationship with another person, you know, within mm-hmm. the confines of a covenantal vow where you're committing never to leave. So, and I think that really messes with people. And I think it really messes with women. Whenever you have the message that I can engage with promiscuous sex like a man and I'm going to be just fine, it's a lie. It's just a lie. And when I was in my early 20s and I had gone through my conversion and I was living a chaste life, but I knew a lot of girls who were not, and they were my friends. I loved them. Like we were buds. I saw what the culture didn't see, because one of them was my roommate. Yeah. And so I would see what happened behind closed doors when that guy left. And there was mm-hmm. no way she could tell me that she had gotten girl power out of that. So I think that's one of the messages that we receive. I think if you're not physically beautiful or if you don't have the right like on-trend clothing, right? Like, you know, you're not going to be cool. You're not going to be on-trend. I think that is one. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to think of what aren't there any that you come to your mind that I'm missing?
I think just the other one that we talked about was just that that at the beginning of just like family life will throw your life away, you know, like kind of prioritize mm-hmm. like your life, your dreams first before family. And also even the other extreme of just like your dreams have to be put aside so that you can be a wife and mother. So I think that one is one that women are honestly just constantly being rattled by, like thrown around, like, which one is it? Which one is it?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think that's a huge one. And I think on the heel of that in the secular culture, not just marriage, but children specifically, they'll ruin your life. They're fun suckers. They're going to dampen your ability to travel. Don't like whatever you do, don't have kids. Mm-hmm. And on that note, a few years ago, I'm not on TikTok because I'm a millennial and I know a lot of millennials are on it, but it's like a grandmother with email. I can't do it. Yeah. And, but I did see it. Maybe I was on it or maybe I saw it on an article, but there was a TikTok that had gone viral and it was a girl getting proposed to. That was the scene. So the guy knelt down on his knee with a ring and she was thinking about saying yes, but then it flashed forward to her life. And it was her cleaning, you know, on the ground, scrubbing the floor, her cooking, her holding a baby, her and like so exhausted, so tired. And she said no.
Whoa.
And I thought to myself, that is so dangerous.
Yeah.
Because that was my life. I'm like, they depicted it perfectly. Like, but they took out any of the fulfillment, any of the beauty, any of the happiness that comes from it. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And if women are being fed that, why would they choose to sacrifice for their future children?
Absolutely. I mean, it's the comparison that comes to mind is like if you tell a woman just like all the horror birth stories of how hard it is mm-hmm. to give birth, but you never share the beauty of having children and loving your child. Like, you think they're going to want to have a kid? Like, no. Like, we need to be able to share both. So,
right.
Yeah, absolutely. That is a big one. So I wonder, like, if there's women who are listening right now, or maybe they know they have friends, like if there's light bulbs going off of like, oh, mm-hmm. I have totally believed that in the past, or like, yeah, like that's actually something I've been living by. Like, how can we speak to these women? What are some signs that they can be looking for in their hearts to kind of point them like, am I being discipled by the culture? Am I being discipled by social media, by the media I'm consuming more than I'm being discipled by the gospel and our church and our faith? And how can they stay grounded in truth while still, like you were saying, engaging in the culture and engaging in the world around? Because I do think there's something to be said about like, we don't want to become like hermits that live under a rock. Like, that's also not healthy and not good to not engage in the culture. Like, we want to be, like they say, like in the world, but not of the world. So how can you do that?
So if anyone's listening who their heart is being pinged or something that I said or you said resonates with them, I think first pay attention to that and write it down. I'm a big journaler, and what journaling does for me, even in my busy life, is it actually helps me distill everything else. And so something that I do, for example, to keep renewing my mind is I will go to bed at night. I will write down my day I always wish it was more poetic. It's not. But the reason that I do that is for me to see that 80% of my day was excellent. And if I don't relive that, then all I'll think about is what was negative. And I'll start to think about all the, like, it's true. And so I'll tell you, the first time I did this, I decided I was going to do it. And we had the Northern Lights here in Colorado. I don't know if you remember this. And so I was with my girls upstairs and we were looking for it. It was really hard to see. But if you put your phone up, you could see it really. And then that was that. And I put them all to bed. Yeah. And then I eventually went and I laid down and I wrote in my journal, tonight, for the first time in my life, I saw the Northern Lights. And I was about to keep going. And I was, I stopped and I was like, this is a big deal. I've never seen the Northern Lights. And though they weren't spectacular as if I was up way up north, but they were beautiful. And what a moment. And had I not sat down to distill that out, I would have just kept going. It would have just been something in my day. I wouldn't even have thought twice about it. And so for people who are listening, if something is pinging you, don't move on. And I don't mean you don't have to stop right now and journal. You can drop to your knees if you want. That'd probably be a good thing to do. But pocket it in your back pocket. And when you get a moment, sit down, write it out. Say, like, what was bothering me about that interview? What was making me think more deeply? What was I agreeing with? Something, whatever stood out to you. And then just, Lord, what do you want? Why did this stand out to me? What do you want to say to me here? What do you want to tell me about this thing? Okay, now what do you want me to do?
Mm-hmm.
And so, and God willing, something will come to you. I've heard the Lord audibly once in my life. So I don't know. He could speak audibly to you. He will speak to your heart in some way. And you might already have that truth within you. You know there's a habit you need to change. And then beyond that, my challenge to your listeners, and it's a challenge to me too, is to up-level some of the culture and the media you consume. So try to make the ratio of mindless, funny reels, like make that 5%. And make maybe a little more like true goodness and beauty 70. I know that doesn't match up to 100, but try to say, okay, where is some good culture that I can go to that will really edify me and bring me into the truth? There are plenty of books. There are plenty of podcasts. There's this podcast. There's my podcast. There's plenty of Bible studies. And then talk to your friends about it. I think having good, solid, virtuous friendships where you guys are challenging each other towards having a renewed mind and living the gospel well. Like, so if you're talking about something that's going on in the culture, okay, you guys can talk about, where do you see God working there? What might he be trying to teach you? And then what it does, it just reorients your frame of mind. It reorients the way that you're starting to see things and digest things. And it's bringing you closer to the Lord, not farther. And it also, at least for me, it acts as a guardrail to whenever I am getting too far. So, and then I can kind of check myself and reorient.
Totally. Yeah. I love the emphasis that you have placed just on virtue throughout this conversation, and even looking for that in your friends or growing together with your friends. Because I think especially what I have seen is especially women in their 20s, I feel like, are kind of told, kind of what you were saying, like your decisions today, like don't really matter that much, like go live it up, do whatever. Then your real life will start later. But like, this is your real life. Today is your real life. And the decisions we make today inform who we are tomorrow, inform who we are in 5 years and in 10 years, and what kind of wife and mother you're going to be, what kind of career woman you're going to be. It's not something that just like flips one day to the next. And I know I fell into this too. Like I knew like the habits that I had before getting married, and I was excited to get married because I thought it was like a clean slate. Like all of a sudden I'm going to let go of all these bad things because now I'm married and now I'm a wife and like now I can start my life and like start over. And it's like, what? It did not work that way. Like I still have bad habits I'm trying to get rid of and I'm still growing in a lot of ways. And so something I have conversations like this with my sister because she's 22 and I'm 28. And so I'm always trying to tell her like, this is what I wish I would have known when I was 22. And I think one of the things is that like in our 20s, we're being told that it doesn't matter. And we just float. Like there is a temptation to just float through your 20s. Like it doesn't matter to just like fill your life with nonsense or live kind of without meaning or great purpose, and not really care about virtue because we think we'll do that once we're quote unquote real adults or quote unquote in the real world or when my life really starts. So my encouragement here is like, really take everything we're sharing to heart and apply it today, because how you're living today, the decisions you make, how you form yourself is truly going to impact the woman that you are in a year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years all down the road. One last thing, if you can think of, you mentioned, you know, there's other books, mm-hmm. there's other podcasts. Do you have any that you love that you just want to rattle off, like some book titles or some podcast names or speakers, someone that you're like, this is someone that you got to consume. Yes.
So this guy, and he's political, so I'm just going to make that little PSA, but probably one of the guys I've learned the most from as far as the culture goes is Andrew Klavan. He's a Daily Wire podcaster. I don't know him personally, but mm-hmm. he probably wouldn't like being called a podcaster. He's an author, and he's my dad's age, so he's 70. And he made his life's work as a writer. He's written fiction. He converted from basically atheist Jewish in his late 40s or early 40s to Christianity. And so now he calls himself an Anglican Catholic. He's Anglican. He has such a good hold on high culture, like the classics. He's read everything there is to read. And what he does very well, he's just like, okay, this thing is happening in the world. Now, he's very conservative, so take it for what it's worth. But this thing is happening in the world today. This is what everybody's saying about Trump. This is what's happening in the war. This is whatever it is. We're going to talk about Shakespeare. And I'm going to tell you why this matters. And there have been times when I have gone on runs. I'm thinking of one in particular. He opened up Paradise Lost. And the way he explained Paradise Lost, I rarely finish a podcast and I'm like, that was time well spent. You know, normally I'm just listening to something. And I was like, wow, I just learned so much from that 30-minute run. And so he's a great person. He will bring you up in your knowledge for sure. And he does a great job of distilling the culture. So that's one. Any good, like, classic novels that this is... Anna Karenina is one of my favorite books. It's a great fictional read that kind of shows the truth of how sin works and how grace works. Mm. You know, it's 1,000 pages. It's really long. It took me a year. Okay, I'm not a hero.
Wow.
But if you want to pick it up, if you're willing to handle that every Russian character has 5 names and you can get to a place where you enjoy it, it's a great read. I'm trying to think. Picture of Dorian Gray is another great book that kind of shows the reality of sin and grace. And I'm trying to think of like any like good speakers.
Yeah.
I mean, there's obviously Father Mike Schmitz, who is obviously so loved, and he does a great job. Any of the good Catholic speakers. And I'm trying to think of any. If I think of anything, I'll email you and you can totally. Add it to the show notes if you want.
Yeah. No, but that was awesome. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thanks for your time this morning. I loved this very thought-provoking conversation, and I just love hearing your perspective. Thanks for coming on and sharing with us.
Mari, it was such a pleasure. Thanks for spending time with me.
Where can everybody find more about you?
You can follow me on Substack at The Gospel and Everything Else. That's going to be where I'm kind of landing soon. I've been contracting for Focus. I'm rolling off of that in a week and a half to just pursue my dreams. Cool. And so awesome. And The Gospel and Everything Else podcast as well, which will be weekly soon enough. It hasn't been recently.
Yay.
And then of course on Instagram at Mallory A. Smythe.
Okay, perfect. Everybody go ahead and check her out over there. Thanks, Mallory.
Thanks, Mari.
Thank you so much for listening in. If you've enjoyed this episode, please share it with your friends and on social media and give me a 5-star rating on whatever podcast platform you're listening on. That helps me and the show out so much. Also, make sure to follow the podcast on Instagram at EverBePodcast. And if you want more content like this and you don't already follow me, you can also follow me on Instagram at mari.c.wagner. And may his praise ever be on our lips. God bless.